So I'm super excited to be here. I'm especially excited about our guest speaker today. But before we get started with the intro, I wanted to introduce myself. So my name is Mary Ann Bianco, and I'm with Oracle. And I'm a VP there that runs their Cloud SaaS group for the high-tech practice. And maybe more importantly to today, I'm on the board of Watermark. So I'm hoping you guys, you ladies and gentlemen, have a fantastic day today. And if it so moves you to become a sponsor or to become a member, we would love to have you be members. So the thing that is a big takeaway for me as a board member and sponsor and member are the relationships that I've built over the course of my 5 years with some amazing women and men as well. So I hope you really enjoy the day. So we'll get on with the intro here. So Dr. Jen Welter is amazing. I don't know about you, but it takes a lot of courage for me to go through my day every single day at work. And this woman is the epitome of courage. So Dr. Jen became the first female to coach the NFL. I mean, amazing. When she joined the Arizona Cardinals as a linebackers coach in the summer of 2015. So that experience and the insights that she gained from that have been chronicled in her book, and I believe we're doing a book signing at 12:30. I know I'm going to be there with my signed copy. And the name of the book is Play Big, Lessons in Being Limitless. So she's also the first woman to play running back in a men's professional football league and the first to coach a men's professional football team, where she helped lead the Texas Revolution through their most successful year in their franchise history. Come on, really. And I even heard from her last night that she went hit for hit with these guys who were three times her size. So she's got a list of awards here that I want to read to you. She's won 4 national championships, 2 gold medals as a member of Team USA for the International Federation of American Football. She's been recognized at the United Nations as a sports pioneer of the year, certainly, absolutely pioneer. And ESPNW named her one of the top 25 most influential women in sports. She's been a frequent guest speaker on NFL Network, EPN, ABC, and Fox. And if that isn't enough to make you feel like, oh my God, I'm in awe, she also has her PhD in psychology and a master's in sports psychology. So let's welcome Dr. Jen Welter.
Amazing. You gotta go behind me. All right, so go behind me. This is a freaking amazing room. Hello. I look at this and I just think, if anybody even knew how much power was in this room right here, they might run the other direction. And they probably should if they weren't on our team. I don't think that we give ourselves enough credit. I'm gonna tell you, I've been told I was wrong my whole life. I was told I was crazy more times than I could possibly count. You know what that taught me? People will call you crazy when you have a vision and a purpose that hasn't been done before. So frankly, I love my brand of crazy. And I would encourage every single one of you to find your own brand of crazy, embrace it, and run with it. Because exactly what makes you different is ultimately what makes you very special in this world. Think about that. We do a lot to try and normalize, to try and fit in, to try to not too hard to get noticed. Don't stand out. Be like somebody else. Find somebody else who you want to be like and emulate what she does. Ladies, for too long, we were hidden. For too long, we were doing great things behind other people. It used to drive me crazy when they would say, behind every good man is a great woman. Why the heck are we behind him? Right? Why are we not arm in arm? Okay? I want to be arm in arm with somebody. I don't need to be in front of him. I don't need to be behind him. We need to rock together. Right? As women, we've got to do a better job rocking together. Rocking up for each other. Showing each other what's possible in this world. Owning your it factor. And being willing to say, I don't want to fit in when I can stand up and stand out. They used to say that football was the final frontier for women in sports. I heard it my whole career. Well, guess what? I kind of think then if a woman can coach in the NFL, we can do anything. Right? This is making really odd noises, so I'm just gonna move it. And if not, I'm gonna get coach style loud for you, because I can do that too. I can assure you it's happened more than once. But ladies, I wanted to start with that because I think a lot about what we can do when we own something very simple. You each are the actor, director, writer, producer, everything in your own story. You get to create that it factor in every room that you walk into. You get to be the woman and the men. And frankly, I love all the guys that I see in here. Give me a hand, guys. Hey, you know why? Because clearly, all y'all are geniuses. You want to know how we think. Well done, fellas. Well done. I always know when I'm at a women's conference and there are men in that room, we could change the world. Because none of the biggest things that ever happened in my career happened because a woman opened the door for me. There were no women in the room. Okay? So we got to be very honest. When we say about the next evolution for women, it should be arm in arm with men and finding ways to work together. Because ladies, I gotta tell you, if there are no women in the room and the door is locked, a dude has to open the door for you. Just point blank perfect. Okay? Let's be really honest. But we have to find ways to work together. And that's why I love that it factor, that swag. I love thinking about an actress while balancing that with being authentic. Because I'm not gonna change for anybody. There's a lot of things I'm really bad at in this world. Let me tell you one of them. Sitting back, being quiet, fitting into a mold, fitting into somebody else's box, listening to what I couldn't, shouldn't, and wouldn't do my whole career. And I say this because I know every single person in this room is here because you know that you can do something better. You know that you have an opportunity in your life to change some element, whether it's big or small. Or you wouldn't be in this room, not with me. Because as coaches, I figured it out. The best gift we can ever give a player is to make them better. It's very simple. I used to tell my guys that in the NFL all the time. My job is to make you better, whether it's football or in life. If I can help you, I will help you. I will give anyone who knows me, and even those who don't, all the keys to the kingdom to be able to do anything that I've done, because you know what? It's not different. I've had people before say, well, I don't know if I can relate to you because I don't know football. That's okay. I promise you we're not going to talk any X's and O's. Not in football, maybe in love or in life. But the game that you play is the special area that you have to make a difference.
And I don't want all of us to play the same game. It's pretty boring, actually. I want you to take the lessons that maybe made me a little different and a little crazy and very successful in football and put them in your own game, right? Because that's what we do, right? When you create an it factor, when you create something, it's learning how to play the game by the rules that you want to set for yourself, right? That's why I came in this big fancy jacket. You know why? Because ladies and gentlemen, this is what a football player looks like. This is what a coach looks like. I was told that my whole career. You don't look like a football player. You're this, you're that. You're too small, you're too pretty, you're too this, you're too that. And you know what? When I let them be right, and I tried to play the game by their rules or to fit into what their model of what a football player looked like, I never measured up. Because I was never going to be big enough or strong enough or fast enough to put into perspective outbigging the big players. So then it happened one day. I realized I probably wasn't going to outbig anybody at 5'2", 130 pounds. So you know what? Why not take every bit of criticism that they'd ever given about me? You don't look like a football player, you're too small, you're too this, and use it to my advantage. I decided if I wasn't going to outbig anybody at 5'2", 130 pounds, but I did tick them off. I ticked them off because I was pretty and little and cute. So why not embrace my inner little chihuahua? Why not play up the little and cute and obnoxious card out on the football field? So instead of trying to be bigger, right, like wear black and like look tough and like, I decided I would start wearing a pink undershirt and pink shoelaces. And I'd wear makeup when I played football. And instead of trying to be like, yeah, you know, we gonna do blah, blah, blah. Instead I'd be like, hey baby, do you need a hand up? Because I'm gonna be here all day. Right? Realize the game that you're playing and realize the power is actually what happens in between the plays. Lots of people are out there making tackles, but nothing messed with them more than a 5'2" linebacker who would smile at them, help them up afterwards, blow kisses to them. Not even kidding. One of the coaches who I've actually traveled overseas with now twice as a player and once as a coach with him on my staff, we used to have a rivalry. He was a coach of Chicago, and he used to say, I was that one as a player. I wasn't the captain who was getting everybody in place and looking out for everybody. I was the problem child. I was the one they had to game plan against. I was the one that they might run the opposite side just to not get tackled by me. Okay? So I had a lot of coaches call me a lot of things, and I promise you, if they were on the opposite team, they were not very nice. This coach used to say often, Welter, I hate your face. You should hate my face, coach. My whole job is to mess up your offense. I'll see you next play. This is what we do in life, though. This is something that you can create in every action and interaction that you have. Right? I decided that I would embrace this character. And I would do everything knowing that everything had an impact. Right? Realizing that me being too little and too pretty and not looking like a football player, if I was trying to not be that, I was epically failing. But when I decided that I wanted to be nothing but that, I took my game to a whole nother level. Right? Life and football, to me, are hand in hand.
the lessons I learned in football have made me better in all areas, right? In football, it's not a question of if you're going to get hit, it's when. So then knowing that, you have to know that it's all about getting back up. You will get hit. Sometimes it will hurt more than others. But when you get back up, do it with a whole lot of attitude. That was something I embraced in my career in the women's game. I was so good at it that I had an international reputation as being the crazy American. I was so small on the field that they used to call me kid. And yet they were terrified of me. But that wasn't tackles and sacks and all of those things. It was those things in between the play. It was making sure I made a tackle and then popping up while everybody was still on the ground and getting into the huddle. It was knowing the fact that if I saw somebody on the opposite team doing this, I own you, right? We all know body language, but how many times do we think about how that body language or that persona that you portray impacts how other people view you, okay? I started to realize that if this on another person meant she was defeated, I was never going to let anyone see me like that. Does it mean I wasn't tired? No. But instead, I would do this. I'm still tired. I'm still resting. You get nothing from me. Right? And those things, that's not just sports. That's life. These are things that you have the power to do big and small in your lives every single day. It was the tough times that made me tough. People look at the NFL and they see a shiny penny and they assume that there were all the things that came along with being a man in the NFL. But let me tell you, as a woman who went on to become one of the best to ever play the game, I still remember when I had an opportunity to try out for the very first time. I had loved football my whole life, but girls weren't allowed to play. I was a great athlete. I was a captain of the soccer team. I was all of these things, but my sports career was over. I had been told by my first love, my tennis coach, that I was too small to play tennis. Killed my dreams as a kid. I wasn't yet strong enough to know I could prove him wrong. He was my authority. He was who I looked to determine the level that I could climb to. So he had the power to change how I thought about myself, right? Then I got older. I played rugby in college. I was one of the best out there. Got recruited to the under-23 national team. Went through the tryouts. Was one of the best there. And the coach told me, "You are one of the best players that we have. And as much as I would like to take you, at this level, I can teach other people to do what you do, but I can't double your size. I'm sorry, you're too little." So the narrative of being too small had won many times in my life. And so now, here's this sport that I loved from the time I was a very little kid, and I got recruited to try out. And the night before that tryout, I almost didn't go. I was afraid. What if they told me I was too little again? Would I be able to get past it? Would I be able to survive? Would I be able to get over it? As one of the very best women in the world, 4 Super Bowls, 2 gold medals, an 8-time Pro Bowler, who went on to play in men's football and then coach it. I had the same feeling that every single person who has ever gotten to their own greatness had. That imposter syndrome. That I'm not good enough. Maybe it's not meant for me. Maybe I don't deserve these dreams. I had it just like you two. There's no one in this world that hasn't had that feeling. But you know what I realized? I could live with being too small. but what I couldn't live with for the very rest of my life was wondering what would have happened if I just went out for that football team. And I tell that story to get real with every single one of you, that there is a greatness in you that you have not even tapped into yet. And I don't care how great you are, because I still look for that in myself every day. Where can you move the needle, big or small, in your own life or in the life of somebody else? It's there. But it doesn't happen by sitting on the sidelines. It doesn't happen by trying to become someone that you're not. It happens when you own every ounce of your own brand of crazy. And you realize that everything that has made you wrong in so many areas of your life is exactly what will ultimately make you right. That is the power every single one of you has. You have to embrace that swag. And you have to do it not despite the hard times, but because of the strength that those hard times gave you. Because of the pressure that forged you into being the diamond that you are today. Maybe a diamond in the rough, maybe one that wants to shine a little brighter, but you are everything that you went through. I will never forget the very first check I got from playing professional football. Although we used to call it pro, because we couldn't quite afford all those letters. It was after the year I won my first Super Bowl, 2004, my fourth year playing. We went undefeated. 12 games, 12-0, won the Super Bowl. We got a ring and a check for $12. People talk about disparity in our society. To me, it's nowhere more than it is in sports. And that is one of the biggest platforms. And I look at it, I'm like, man, if we could change this, everybody could see it. People laugh at the amount of that check sometimes, but to me, it's still the most valuable check I've ever gotten, because it was the difference for playing for nothing and getting paid to play. Back in that day, you know, it wasn't like you had photo deposit. It was actually a conscious choice that you could either cash it or kept it. So I kept that check as a reminder of what I was doing, what I was playing for, what we're all playing for. Because see, to me back then, it wasn't about winning and losing. People ask where I get this passion. Well, we were never supposed to do it. So I felt like we were winning every time we got to play that game. I felt like every time I stepped onto that field, I was magic. At 5'2", I felt like I could play 6'10", because that's what passion is. That's what it does in our lives. It allows us to be something bigger. It allows us to do things that we maybe wouldn't have thought were possible otherwise. So I played all of those years. Boom, boom, boom. One of the best females in the world, and nobody knew we existed. We used to say we were the best kept secret in sports, but damn it, we didn't want to be a secret. Right? You find your own ways of getting through it. Now, in that time when I was so great, people used to ask me all the time. They would say, oh, Jen, you know, you've been playing football for a long time. You're really good. What's your goal? Are you trying to play in the NFL? And I'd be like, I'm 5'2", 130 pounds. I would never play football against men. I'm not crazy. So apparently God has a great sense of humor. Because what happened was, I got called by this team called the Texas Revolution, and they were an indoor football team in Dallas. And they asked if I would come into a meeting, and I was like, all right, well, you know, I'll go in for your meeting. I didn't know what they wanted. But I decided I would take the meeting, and I would also remember, I said, it's about your it factor. So I wore really tall shoes that day. I was walking in some boots, and you know, I was at least 5'4". I was gonna take the news that they had. And it was an interesting dynamic because the president of the team was very excited to meet me. He was so excited, he looked like he was gonna try and sell me a used car. And the coach was not so excited. This was an old school Alabama black man football coach, and he was not having this. He was not making eye contact. Y'all know that guy that I'm talking about? Coach Dub was not happy about this meeting. This was his game, and what was he doing? He was drawing in a non-existent playbook. Don't make eye contact, and maybe she'll go away. So Tommy says, Jen, we think it would be amazing if you would go through a day of training camp with our guys. And I sat there, and I was like, so you want me to, like, go through a day of training camp and, like, catch a few footballs, run some ladders, and smile for the cameras, get you guys some good pub? And he was like, yeah! And I was like, absolutely not. That's an insult to me as an athlete who just won my second gold medal. And if I was any one of the guys on your team, I would absolutely hate it. If you want to do anything with me and your football team, I either do everything that they do, step for step, hit for hit, or I do nothing. And in that moment, I knew two things. Without a shadow of a doubt, I had just changed the course of my destiny because I refused to be a publicity stunt. I got chills over my body. I knew it was happening. I knew I was going to play football against men, and I also knew I might have gotten myself killed. Because it was a place I shouldn't go and a thing I shouldn't be doing, but what I knew is that I couldn't do anything else. I was willing to do that and make that shift and play that game with those men for every single one of the women who I'd been in the trenches with, fighting with, linking arms with, playing for a dollar a game. The same game as the guys. A dollar a game versus millions. I always said I knew it would take something drastic for us to finally break through. And apparently I was getting tackled by those guys every day. Because that is what happened. But in that process, I learned a whole lot. I learned a whole lot about those men and a whole lot about myself. Right? Those guys taught me, just like I taught them. I talked to one of those guys I played with the other day, Clinton Solomon, who was like my mentor when I was there. And I just called him and I was like, Solo, I just want to thank you for how you looked out for me on that team. And he said, girl, don't you dare. He said, you changed every man that you stepped on that field with that never knew a woman could do what you did. He said, you made us all better. He said, I get asked, and he played in the NFL. And so most people would assume that he would get asked by the NFL most of it. He said, I get asked almost daily. Aren't you on that team that had a girl on it? And he said, no, not a girl, the girl. He said, because that was special and you changed all of us. Now, what happened because of those special relationships, and when I talk about something worth fighting for in this life, it's the people that you love, and it's loving them hard, and it's being willing to go to bat for them. Because you know what? While they looked out for me on the field, I looked out for them in things that were not right from a business standpoint. And I wasn't scared to say it, because what I would say to the office, I made myself a little unpopular, is when I would bring up some of these issues that these men were not being treated the way they should, I would say, when they pushed back, I'd say, well, you know, I am the number one story in the country right now, so I'd be happy to tell them why I was kicked off the team. Oh, you don't want that? Oh, I guess we're going to look at that again and change that, huh? But the guys couldn't, because what I did watch is when one of the guys, who was like my family, stood up and tried to get things on that team changed, he was kicked off that team, and he was, you know, probably went to another team. He just was too much of a problem. So it was easier to just get rid of them. go ahead and get rid of me. Woo, that's about to be a problem. Because I was never supposed to be there anyway. So I sure was not going to let you use that against me. But because I stood up for those guys the way they stood up for me on the field, we became like a family. And when we had a new head coach come in the following season, Wendell Davis, former Dallas Cowboy, we ran into each other at an event. I didn't know my guys were going to be there. I just went in and blah, blah, blah. They picked me up, tossed me around like football, because relative to them, I am one. And Wendell said, "Who is this girl that all of my guys love?" I said, "Coach, that's your running back." And he said, "I got to talk to her." So Wendell sits me down. He grills me about football, what was good with the team, what wasn't. Now, I think I'm done, okay? I got tackled by those guys every day for a season. I don't need to do that again. I think it aged me like dog years that year. I'm good. So I have, again, nothing to lose. I wasn't supposed to be here. So what am I going to do? I'm going to make sure that that situation is set up for every guy who is still there. This is what was good. This is what wasn't good. Here's what I would suggest. He grilled me about football. We went back and forth. It's not always comfortable with guys when they grill you on football, so you kind of got to stand tough for them. We had a great conversation. Handed off numbers. I thought I was good. Hey, I left them in a better situation than they were before. I'm good. So the next day, Wendell calls me, and he says, "All my defensive coordinator and I could talk about yesterday is how you have to coach this football team." And I said, "No. I don't want to coach football. I'd never even thought about coaching football. I wasn't that player. Remember, I told you, I was not the captain keeping everybody organized. I was the problem. I was the wild card. I was the sack maker. Hey, y'all do what you got to do. Tell me my job, who to tackle. It's done." And that was about it. So I said, "No." And he said, "Jen, you do know not a lot of guys are going to give you this opportunity, right? You're taking this job." And I said, "No." And I hung up the phone on it. So the next day, Wendell called me back and told me about myself. He said, "Do you remember how I told you not a lot of guys were going to give you that opportunity and you were taking this job?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Good. I took it for you. You're coaching for me. And by the way, you can't quit. Otherwise, the entire narrative surrounding women coaching in men's professional football will be, 'We had a girl once, and she quit.'" Ah! Boy, oh boy, did Wendell have my number. But I lovingly say that he drop-kicked me into success. Because he saw something in me before I even saw it in myself. And this is something that I see far too often with even amazing people in our society. We're afraid that we are not good enough. Listen, and I love the guys in this room, but I'm going to be real with you women for 1 second. Women will read a job description, and they will have 9 out of 10 things. The 10th one being a man. And they'll say, "No, I'm not qualified." And they will self-select out. Whereas guys have been taught to rise to the occasion, to learn on the fly. They don't suffer from imposter syndrome the same way we do. They will read a want ad, a job description, and think, "I had a reality show. I can be president." Ladies, if there was one lesson I would take from Donald Trump, that is the only one. We have to be willing to step up into greatness. And we have to be willing to drop kick some of our friends who may not see it in themselves yet to success at the next level. Because if she won't do it or he won't do it for himself, but you know he's capable, maybe you have to say, "You know what? I took it for you. And by the way, you can't quit or." because that's what a lot of us are afraid of. What if I actually push myself to that level of greatness and I fail? I've had a lot of those moments being out front. It's uncomfortable. It's tough. Some of the press I read about myself, goodness, what I learned is you can't read it. Because if it's good, it's not going to help you be good. And if it's not good, you quite possibly might want to curl up in a little ball underneath a table. Right? But then you're giving them power over you. Okay? So I eventually coached the Revolution. We had a very successful season. I'm coaching them. And then all of a sudden, this huge thing happens in the NFL. The NFL hires Sarah Thomas as the first full-time female ref in NFL history. And somebody asks the coach of the Arizona Cardinals, Bruce Arians, a question. Now, why would they ask Bruce Arians? It wasn't even in Arizona. Because Bruce is a coach that will tell you the truth. Okay, you've all heard the press conference with the football coach who actually says less than you knew before the press conference. Well, you know, the team with the most points at the end of the game will win. Oh my gosh, the revelation. Thank you so much, coach. I feel so much better about the world right now just based on that statement. No, Bruce will tell you something. So a reporter asks Bruce Arians if he could ever see a female coaching in the NFL. And Bruce being Bruce, his personal philosophy, by the way, is no risk it, no biscuit. Not kidding. Bruce says, the second a woman proves she can make these guys better, she'll be hired. So I talked to my head coach about it. He's an ex-NFL guy. And he was like, well, we should call Bruce. Can you get me his number? Dude, you played in the NFL, can't you get his number? But you know, ladies, we gotta do a lot. Now, I always say being a female athlete is a real full-time hustle. You gotta have like 47 jobs. Maybe that's why my number was 47. If I had to go back and pick a new one, I might have picked one. But no, I had like 47 jobs my whole career, okay? Well, on that day, I invented a new one. I was not an assistant coach. I was an assistant to the head coach, and I called the Arizona Cardinals on behalf of myself, as if I was not myself. Being the assistant to the head coach, I had heard, you know, my head coach had heard that Coach Arians had said the second a woman could make these guys better in the NFL, she'd be hired. And although it was not the NFL, it was men's professional football, and though, of course, Coach Arians couldn't have possibly known it, there was already a female coaching in men's professional football, and he thought that Coach Arians would want to have a conversation. I apparently made it sound really good, because I worked my way to BA's assistant, and BA's assistant, Wesley, said, you know, I think Coach would really want to take this call. Unfortunately, we're like days before this little thing called the NFL draft. So they were a little busy. Can't imagine why I didn't have time to take the call. So he asked for my head coach's number. And I gave it to him. And now, I'm not going to lie, completely thought I had gotten blown off. Completely. But I was really proud of myself that I had the guts to call the Cardinals. I was like, man, that was really cool. I called an NFL team. And then I walk into practice like 2 weeks later, and my head coach is so excited. He said, you will never guess who I talked to yesterday for about an hour. I said, Coach, I'm sleepy. I'm not a mind reader. Dude, I have no idea. And he said, Bruce Arians. And he said, tell me about this girl. Sometimes you just have to be willing to pick up the phone. Sometimes you have to be willing to get out of that comfort zone, go to that tryout, pick up that phone, and when you do, create that it factor. Take it for yourself, right? So now, eventually, I get this invite to go to OTAs to meet Bruce Arians, okay? And this is what I love about this man. Here he is, one of the most powerful men in football. And I knew in about 5 minutes why he was so successful. Because a girl who prior to that day, the closest I had ever been to an NFL sidelines was the nosebleed section. He made me feel like I was the most important person in the world that moment. In a situation that could have been so intimidating, he made it feel so natural. And I remember thinking, I would run through a freaking wall for this man. I knew I would have done it as a player, and man, I wished I could have played for a guy like that. But here I was, and I knew why he was so successful. It was so easy to tell. And though I would have run through a wall for him, he broke a glass ceiling for all of us. Because that doesn't happen if he wasn't willing to bet his entire coaching legacy on me. Think about that. As much as that man had done in football, if one thing would have gone wrong in that situation, all they would have said about Bruce Arians and his history in the NFL was, yeah, he did X, Y, and Z, but can you imagine that time he lost his mind and he hired that girl? Don't you remember that man? And that's what change looks like, right? It's not pretty and polished and perfect all the time, but sometimes it just has to be one person in power betting on someone else to elevate them and being willing to make that bet. I remember I never really knew exactly what made Bruce feel so confident that he could bet on me. And so when I was writing my book, I asked him about it. I was really excited that I got to ask him. And I talked to his wife, Chris. Now, she's a little fireball, okay? She's about this tall. But with her hair, which is spiked up, she's about my type. And I hadn't yet gotten to talk to Bruce, but I had this theory, right? And I was at his golf tournament, which is like the sanctuary for head coaches. That's how all the other guys were like, yeah, Bruce does actually like you, huh? He got you here, right? That's the spot. None of his other assistant coaches were there. But he had me, and he's like, honey, you got to meet this guy and this guy and this guy. This is how it's done. You got to handshake these guys. Come on. That was about it. That was the coaching I got. But I was talking to Chris, and I said, you know, I'm so excited that Bruce is willing to, like, be interviewed for this book. Because I feel like sometimes people put too much emphasis on the job that I did and forgot that it took him betting his entire coaching legacy on me for that to even happen. And she looked at me and she was like, oh, honey. He asked me about it. And I said, have you lost your mind? Why would you be willing to bet your entire coaching career on some little girl? And then she looked at me, and she smiled, and she said, but that is what I love about my husband. He had not one doubt when it came to you. It was not a girl or every woman. It was this woman in this situation. She said he had no doubt when it came to you. And when I talked to Bruce about it, he said he loved that I was different. He loved that I had a doctorate in psychology. He couldn't believe that, you know, I had played against the guys, and he was fascinated by it. But he also said, when he was talking to me, that when he was coaching in college, one of the best coaches he had ever been around was a receivers coach, and her name was Dot Murphy. And the fact that it had not changed in all those years was just not right. And somebody had to be willing to change it. The way he did it, y'all might just appreciate. Because Bruce worked the system. Remember, I told you, he's a little bit no risk it, no biscuit, right? So Bruce brought me in through the Bill Walsh Minority Coaching Fellowship, which was set up for African-American former players who were traditionally underrepresented in the coaching ranks. This was the ultimate minority in that situation, since there had been zero before. But Bruce worked the system, and if I had to suspect, he asked for a little bit of forgiveness, not necessarily permission. But that's how change happens. And when you see that diversity works, whatever that diversity is, and that having another dimension in the conversation highlights all strengths, then you start to be willing to make those changes. BA is a guy who felt like he was underrepresented or that he was underutilized at certain places in his career. One of the youngest head coaches in NCAA Division I history, and then one of the oldest first-time head coaches. Because he said, I don't play politics. I play football. I don't play the game within the game. So he wasn't somebody who just went to everybody else's drum. He went to his own. So he was willing to do that because he had faced some discrimination in his own career. So he said, man, when I was in the position to finally make a change, you gotta be willing to make it. You can't build walls. You gotta break them down. And to me, that's special. Now getting into, once I was into the NFL, there's some very tough decisions you have to make. How are you gonna be? Who are you gonna be? There was nobody I could look to and say I'm a coach like her, right? So how do you define who that you're gonna be in a situation where there is zero roadmap, zero mentors, no one? You're on an island and the whole world is watching. And half of them, at least, are holding their breath, hoping that you'll fail. I went back to the best advice I ever received. A dear friend of mine who used to help out with the Revolution, even though we couldn't afford him, but he loved football. Terry Glenn. TG didn't say a lot, but everything he said really said a lot. So we're in practice, Revolution, and he came up to me. And he was like, Jen, I've been thinking a lot about you going to the NFL. And the best advice I can give you is to be 100% authentic. Said, if you are the person you were every single day here at practice with those guys, they will absolutely love you. But if you're fake in any way, they will sense it, and they will eat you alive. So I held those words to the core of everything that I did, right? Used that as my guiding principle. When I wasn't sure if I should go high or go low, well, guess what? I'm short. I'm gonna stay short, right? I can't coach the same way the guys were because there were a lot of factors. Number one, if a 6'8" dude gets in the face of a 6'8" dude, that's one thing. But if a 5'2" girl looks up and is like, listen, I told you, not only is it ineffective, but it's pretty funny. And I couldn't yell loud enough to have any of them have to listen. But any one of them could bend down and hear a whisper. So I didn't go in like, you have to do this because I'm a coach, blah, blah, blah. I really would wait, see things, and I'd be like, hey, next time, try that. Just like on the low. And guess what happened? When it worked, they wanted a little bit more. Hey, coach, that really worked. What else you got for me? And I also invested in them very much personally. As I told you earlier, if I can help you, I'm going to help you. That is my job as a coach. And oh, by the way, I do happen to have that thing called doctorate in psychology, which all of y'all need and you won't admit, but for some reason you can come talk to me. Those moments in the hallway were pretty darn priceless. Telling you what, like one of the most popular ones. Coach, you got a minute?
Yeah, what's up?
Coach Jen, my wife is so mad at me, and I don't even know what I did. And I would say, I am an expert in male-to-female translation. Let's talk. Because guess what? Number one, if you're worried about your wife, you are not learning your playbook. But number two, and much more importantly, if they knew that I love them as people and I really cared about their success on every level in their lives, they knew I wouldn't put them in a bad position on a football field either. That trust, that communication, those relationships can pull you through so much. So much, even situations that quite possibly are so awkward you may not know what to do. Well, let me give you a little tip on that one, too. When you are the odd woman out, as I was, you have a distinct ability to change the dynamics of the situation. Let me tell you how. Everybody's walking around on eggshells because they have no idea what to think is going to be like to have this female coach for the first time. What is this like, right? They don't know. So they're nervous. It's like a first date. Can I hold her hand? Is she gonna freak out? Like, do I open doors? Like, how do I do this? Guess what? You can relieve that first date awkward very easily, okay? Know the questions they're gonna ask before they ask it. And this way, you don't take like, I don't know, four dates before you realize that you just had a conversation for the first time. We've all been through that feeling, you know? You're like, you're so awkward and you're on such good behavior that you don't even realize until a couple weeks in that you know nothing about this person. Well, training camp, we didn't have the time or the ability to do that. So guess what? We can get over that awkwardness very quickly by setting the stage, by knowing what they're worried about. For example, I was in the linebacker's room. Okay, we're crazy. And if you take away that crazy from that room, they're not going to be very good. So I remember one time we're talking and you could see that the guys were kind of trying to like toe in the water, like, can we joke with her? Or, you know, is this all right? And so I waited and somebody said something. It was like, really wasn't anything. I couldn't even tell you what words they were to this day, but it was kind of a little like touch of a sarcastic remark, right? And I jumped up and I threw my hands on the table and I was like, listen, son, if you're gonna go there with me, you better go all the way in. Okay, I have a doctorate in psychology. I will own you. And everybody laughed and they were like, all right, we got a Dr. J. Hey, you good, honey. We're not holding back anymore. I said, please don't. You better come with your A game or don't come at all. But once we did that, it changed the whole dynamics of the room because it was like, you know what? We're going to be all right. I believe so much can be fixed or dealt with through laughter. And that was a situation where I had to laugh often. Like the first time the equipment guy called me and said, Coach Jen, we need to know your pant size. Guy had probably been with the Cardinals since the Cardinals were founded. And by the way, that's the oldest NFL franchise, so you get my idea. And I said, well, what kind of pants are we talking about here? Because as women, you know, it's not just like a size, it's a size, it's a size. And he was kind of like, like, you could just hear the why is this in my world? I go. So I did what I think a lot of women do. You know, you guess up, right? I guessed up in the pant size because I pictured it would be a pretty bad thing if, you know, the pants were too small and I don't have an option to wear different pants. So I top-ended these pants. So I get to training camp, and there's this swag box in the room, the stuff you're going to wear, right, all your team stuff. And there's these khaki pants. And there's three pairs of them. And I take them out, and I look at them, and I'm like, they look kind of big. So I put them on. They were so big that I could take them off without unbuttoning them. And all I could picture is getting in a linebacker stance and being international news. So I called the equipment guys, right? So I went to one of my other friends' rooms, right? And looked in their box, and khaki pants in your box. You got these big red athletic shorts, you know, like the basketball shorts. Why can't I just get those? So I called the equipment guy, my best friend, and I said, you know, I was looking in the guy's box, and they had these red athletic shorts, and I have khaki pants. Can I just get the red athletic shorts? And he said, well, coach, we don't mind giving you the shorts, but we don't have your size. They'd be really big. And I said, listen, give me the shorts. Because let me tell you one thing. If the biggest problem that we have to deal with, looking at the first female coach in the history of the NFL, is some big red shorts, we're winning. So I did. And the shorts are a part of like every picture, so you can check them out. I know we set some time aside for Q&A, correct? So what I'd like to do is invite you guys to ask me any questions. I thank you for being wonderful. Oh, I got like four. Actually, he started it, so you should give a hand to the guy. So who has questions? We have mics right here, so very easy if you'd like to ask them. If not, I have many funny stories, so I can tell you those. Come on down, lovely lady.
You said be bold.
That's right, be bold.
So thank you so much for your talk. So many great quotes and inspiration, and I really appreciate it. So I am an executive coach, and we use the jazz metaphor mm-hmm. and the role of vibe. I would love to hear your thoughts on what is the role of vibe in your coaching?
Tell me what vibe is, because not everybody in here knows it. You're talking right now in X's and O's acronyms, right?
That's
so good. You got to remember, first of all, the first step to setting any relationship is communication, mm-hmm. okay? Most of the things that happen in this world, I call a miscommunication, but it's a miscommunication. I can't tell you what's right or wrong about your philosophy if it's not one I use,
okay?
Right? So tell me.
Simply, vibe is that invisible, uncanny energy that emerges from the combination of clarity
yep.
about where you're headed,
yep.
competency, how well you play your own instrument, your role, and chemistry, the role of relational glue and navigating communication and conflict.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that is in everything that we do, right? It is how we set the tone. It's what you know with people around you. I lovingly say that the guys in the NFL, and I talk about this all the time, they needed to know two things. They needed to know this when I played arena, and then they needed to know it in the NFL. There's two things. Number one, that I belonged. I was there for the right reasons. I could do the job. And number two, that we could all get along, right? That it wasn't going to be super awkward, and we didn't have to be on other sides of the fence, that we could get through it. And I think that's so much of it. And I think you have to look at, like in any team building scenario, is getting past your own insecurity. Because if you're going to come together
with the goal of getting better, you have to also be willing to admit where you're not that great. So
that's good. That's good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi.
Thanks.
Hi. So it seems like for you, you're sort of, and this may be wrong, but it seemed like you were sort of just amplifying sort of like a spunkiness and like a pretty like high level of confidence-ish already. Like you seem like already sort of very extroverted sort of thing. And
shy.
Yeah. So I guess like my question is like if my like, I don't know, self is more reserved or whatever, like how do I use that? Because like amplifying that seems counterproductive.
Great question. Great question. But what you want to do, first of all, is set up situations where that is an asset, not a liability, right? If it might be a situation where you're good in one-on-one situations, right? And interpersonal relationships more than the outward ones. Would that be?
Yeah.
Okay. So what you want to do is surround yourself with people that respond very well to what you are and who you are, right? And to, yes, at times you're going to have to push that comfort zone a little bit, but even in the teams that you build, right? You may have somebody who loves to get in front of the room and you're the person who loves to make sure everything's operationalized, okay? I suck at that, right? So I'm not going to be the person who I set myself up to be in that situation. What I want is everybody who's around me to be better than me. I want everybody to have their own superpower, and I don't need them to have a different one. But when we know it and we love it, and you say, you know what, Jen, I am really good with one-on-ones. I'm really good at X, Y, and Z, but I don't feel comfortable in this situation, then it's our goal to amplify your strengths and let you be strong in that, but then put other people in the situation where they can be shine as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
You got it. Okay, so I'm getting the stop signal, but we are going to rapid fire these questions real quick because I just believe in it. Okay, go.
Okay. In sports, I feel like there is this natural pressure and stress already in the game that you're playing. How did you deal with the like extra pressure of people doubting you and like wanting you to fail, or just even just the whole being the only woman in these circumstances?
Very easily. Realizing that, number one, it starts with being good. And number two, you're not doing it for them. You have to do it for you. And they can say all the things that they want to do from the sidelines, but unless they can step in and do your job, then you can't give them the ability to control the narrative in your head. So,
top three tips for shutting down your inner critic in real time.
Say it again.
Top three tips for shutting down your inner critic in real time.
Real time. Number one, your brain can only hold one thought at a time. It's the only possible. Now you can shift one, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So you have to change the narrative. Some people, that's like you might have a visual reminder, right? Like somebody gave me this bracelet yesterday and it says, she believes she could and she did. So you might need a visual reminder that you can tap into that gives you something of strength, right? Like, I don't know if y'all noticed, my rings are very appropriately placed. I used to do that with my Super Bowls, too. Okay? So you may need something that's like your special sauce. It can be a song, by the way. Athletes, we do it all the time. We put on our playlist. Boom, I'm getting into it. I can tell you certain songs. If you put them on right now, I'm going to be like back in that place. So use things in real time that will take you somewhere else. And then also one of the big situations where people tend to get nervous is like in a big crowd, right? And that's when they doubt. You got to find one. I don't need to speak to a million people, I gotta speak to one. And she's dialed in and she's making eye contact and she's nodding her head. So you just find those anchors, whether it's verbal, and you know you have your own ways of learning. So it may be like to hear something, it may be to see it, it may be to do it. Another great one is if you're feeling insecure, realize this. The physiological symbols or the symptoms of anxiety and excitement are exactly the same. The only difference is the translation in your brain. So you need somewhere to put that energy. guess what? Don't do what a lot of people tell you to do, and it's like, just relax. If I could relax, I wouldn't have all this energy. Give the energy a place to go. Whether it's 5 push-ups or jump, or even putting it all into the palms of your hands and then letting it go. Those are your fight or flight mechanisms, so give them a physiological place to be productive. Go.
So you talked about, with the guys, you need to figure out how to make sure that they knew you belonged.
Yeah.
And most of us in a, you're talking to most people here in Silicon Valley or in a high-tech industry, a lot of men in the room.
Yep.
A lot of times we feel like we have to go over and beyond to prove that we belong and that we've
Don't
been
Don't be
there.
A chihuahua.
I get, and believe me, I'm not a shy
right.
chihuahua by any basket.
I have a chihuahua. I love him, but.
But proving to people in the room, whether you have a new job, or you're put in a new role, or just the new situation, you walk in the room, right?
Yep.
What's your, how did you overcome that? Because you had to do it very quickly. You're in training.
Yep.
Nobody can question when you get on that field that you were part of that team.
Right.
So what was a tip or something you can think of to show them that you belonged very quickly?
One of the first things that people look at for as a signal of whether or not you are experienced is how much you talk. A lot of people prove that they're insecure by talking to fill silence. They overtry, mm-hmm. right? Like, you have to listen to me because I'm your coach. No, you don't. Actually, it's a choice to listen to anybody. It would be in your best interest to listen to me. And sometimes you can get more respect by saying less. Right? Make them want more from you. Don't try and speak so much that they start to tune you out. Make sure everything you says has a real point and leaves them wanting you to, hey, can you tell me more about that? Mm-hmm. I win. Mm-hmm. I win. I just set you up for success. I helped you. I proved my worth. And I acted like I've been there before. Right?
Thank you very much.
You got it. Last one, and then we've got the book signing.
I'm asking this as a fellow short person. In fact, you look tall to me. My question
stage.
Is, how was it that you put yourself out there in a situation where you knew you were going to be hit and tackled and in pain? And I'm asking that physically and metaphorically.
Yep. To me, that's about, and I say it like my book is called Play Big because it's about playing for something bigger than yourself. Right? It was about believing that doing this could change it for so many people, and that it was more important to open that door than to be the one who always got to be first. To me, I knew I could die in the process, and I was willing to do that for the love of every other woman who had been in the trenches with me, and knowing that throughout my whole career, as one of the best women in the game, that I thought the more tackles I made, the better I played, by being the baddest bee on the block, would finally get somebody's attention, that they would see women can really play football and they'll fall in love with us, and all of a sudden this will all change. And it never did. That extra sack, that extra stat, that extra tackle changed nothing. So it was going to take something really drastic. And I was willing to be the one who would take those shots, both physically and emotionally, because it wasn't about me. And I think that that's the thing that we have to realize is, when everything that you do is not just about you, and you're really about something, then those temporary things, like pain is temporary, right? Those things will come and go, but the impact that you can have by certain actions really outlasts the pain, whether it's physical or psychological.
Thank you.
You got it.